You are listening to Prometheus by Minute. I'm your host, Courtney Coulson. This is Minute 35. This minute opens with Ravel saying, "No, no, no, the bet was why we came here," and ends with the crew heading further into the tunnels.
Oh, come on, 100 credits. Put it towards a lap dance with Miss Vickers, how about that, eh?
Most of the men in the crew objectify Vickers. I mean, I get it, it's Charlize Theron, but come on, guys, stop being gross. This is a classic case of objectification as a means of dismissal. Meredith is a powerful and attractive woman. She's also their boss. And a lot of men can't handle a woman in charge, so they make jokes like this in order to belittle her and feel like they're holding their own. The fact that she seems cold and inaccessible is almost like a challenge to them, an ice queen, if you will. Which I think is a horrid term and an exclusively female insult. You don't really call men frigid. As if women are only here to entertain us men. I think it would have been nice to explore that further. I like Vickers as a character, and it would be interesting to see the kind of crap she has to deal with on a regular basis. For women in positions of power, there is always this whole other layer of gender and sexual politics at play that male leaders simply don't have to think about. This scene, for example, shows that the men don't take her seriously, but it's not framed as the horrible thing it is, it's just a little joke. A good example of what I'm imagining is Claire Underwood in House of Cards. She is every bit Frank's equal, and yet she's sidelined so often, always up against additional challenges that Frank would never have to think about. He may be queer, but he can hide that from the public. I'm just so fascinated by the dynamic between Wayland, David, and Vickers. I'd happily watch a movie or series focusing exclusively on them. David and Meredith are both ambitious and powerful, and yet marginalized. Neither is quite good enough in the eyes of their father or society. Perhaps this is partly why they have such an antagonistic relationship. They mirror each other in more ways than one. In David, Meredith sees a mocking parody of herself. Vickers, however, is not present in this scene, which removes the potential for any kind of dialogue on this subject. Chance and Ravel sit alone at the helm, and throughout the film we see this set in a variety of different lighting conditions, and I love seeing those variations. Here the lighting is soft, with the sun high in the sky. There's something calm and cozy about it, reflecting how this is a quiet moment for Chance and Ravel, who are just chilling on the bridge, having a lunch break. Given that they are eating, we can assume it has been roughly 2 to 4 hours since they were brought out of cryo. The scenery, of course, is added digitally in post-production. It fascinates me that they can film people against these intense blue and green screens, and the colour doesn't seem to bounce onto the subject. Side note, apparently there is no difference between blue and green screens, it all depends on what colour the foreground subjects are. For instance, the EVA suits are blue, they don't seem to have used any blue screens in Prometheus at all. I can't seem to find any photos of it, but I recall seeing purple screens being used in the Star Wars prequels. As far as I recall, they were filming Anakin and Obi-Wan. I can only assume purple was chosen as their lightsabers are green and blue and might have made post-production trickier. We cut to black. Then, one by one, lights penetrate the darkness and more details emerge. The crew walks towards the camera and their lights illuminate the tunnel. It's a technique we've seen before, but I've always had a fondness for it. Starting a scene looking at something that we don't recognize, then watching as the details slowly emerge. This film does dark scenes so beautifully. It really plays with minimal points of light to tell the story. Strong artificial lights against pure blackness.
It's minus 12 in here.
Not sure if that's Fahrenheit or Celsius. By the way, it's pretty damn cold. Their EVA suits must be very effective, though. They don't seem to be affected by the cold. But wouldn't their faces be cold? If the suits are temperature controlled and generating heat, surely all of that heat would be lost through their collars? This makes the case that keeping their helmets on would have been preferable. Why are you working against yourself like this, movie? I'm trying to defend you.
So why is this water not frozen?
Maybe I know why.
Maybe it's Martian piss.
That's your, scientific theory, is it, Mr. Biology?
Well, whatever it is, I'm sure it's collagenous.
They raise a good point. Why is the water not frozen. Fifield suggests it's not water, which may be true, and yet no one stops to investigate. Also, Milburn's brilliant suggestion is that it's Martian piss. God damn it, Milburn. At the very least, Fifield gives him shit for that comment. This is the second time in this minute that the term Martian has been used. Ravel used the term earlier. Where do you think you are, guys? Milburn says, whatever it is, it sure is collagenous, which is not how you say it. Collagenous is anything containing collagen proteins. How would he know that? Especially when a second ago he was proposing Martian piss as a theory. We cut to David, who ducks away from the back of the group. Shaw gave a look over her shoulder a moment ago. Did she notice him separating from them? It goes uncommented upon otherwise. Through David's monitor, we see no life signs on the readout, which I find amusing, but those three numbers at the top of the screen are still present and even fluctuate. What could this mean? David finds some green sticky stuff on the control panel. Is this mutagen? It looks similar, but what would it be doing up there? As he runs his fingers along to collect a sample, a low static hum can be heard. Is this emitting from the gel or from the control panel itself? The control panels light up when touched, however, in this particular moment it is unresponsive. Perhaps he wasn't applying enough pressure? David declares to himself that the fluid is impressive. Clearly he is detecting things we can't. It may be some kind of gel necessary in the functionality of the engineer's machines. It's difficult to say for certain. What we can say from observation is that it is a highly viscous fluid, giving some resistance when David tries to stretch it between his fingers, much more dense than, say, mucus or honey. Always found that moment kind of dirty. Could just be me, because when I had sex ed in high school, they were discussing vaginal discharge, and the image they used was the fluid being pulled between thumb and forefinger, just like that. So that's the association I will always have. But then, it is alien, we're supposed to see dirty and everything. I'm doing this right. When the light shines through the fluid, we see tiny particles of some kind within it. Nanomachines, perhaps? I love that David gives it a bit of a sniff and then recoils. Was it an unpleasant odour? Was it fishy, perhaps? Why would a synthetic have such instincts? I understand programming an android with an awareness of what may be considered pleasant or unpleasant to a human, but it shouldn't actually affect David in the same way. I wouldn't say his reaction is that of shock or surprise either. Though, those are also not traits he has ever exhibited. Alright, that about covers it. This is Coulson, signing off. You can find me on TraviandDesigns.com, TRAVAN, or Prometheus by Minute on Facebook.